So on today's show, we have Les Fultz. He is the founder of Allaire Studios in Cincinnati, Ohio. I met Les in a business networking group here in Cincinnati, and we're going to talk about video and multi-channel marketing.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schutte, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Les, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Just to start off here, how did you get started in your career here in video?
Well, it was totally by mistake. I really had no plan of operating a camera. And it's kind of funny when I tell that story. I had sold a cleaning business. That's where you and I met. Mm-hmm. I owned Cincinnati Maintenance at the time. I founded that company in 2010, and I sold that business to my employee. And I was more passionate about the marketing, so I got into digital. And attracting some clients and growing my business. And I just bought a $150 point-and-shoot camera and started sharing the content. And I said, aha, as soon as I started producing the content, the gravity and the impact of the content and the reach and the impact dramatically changed. So I just kind of shifted my mindset, and that's where it kind of all started, with an inexpensive point and shoot camera. So
gotcha. And you've kind of evolved now quite a bit from there. So kind of what's your setup today?
Well, I'd say so. We've gone from the point and shoot to a full on live streaming studio with some incredible technology to help broadcast local companies.
I mean, I guess tell me a little bit about what you focus on with that studio, because your real focus is live video streaming. You do a lot of that there.
Well,
right?
I mean, that is our home base. You know, that is our place to operate from. And, I see great opportunity for folks to grow in this space. Right now, we're doing a podcast. And of course, many people have podcasts, but I wanted to bring the opportunity for folks to have a video podcast as well. I wanted people to have that opportunity. So we acquired a client, a local publisher here, Venue and Lead Tribune Media, and we began shooting CEOs, so C-suite folks all over the region. And of course, this is a multi-camera option. So our business kind of just grew in that area, into that space, and we needed a place to really better accommodate the content.
Tell me about multi-camera a little bit. I mean, obviously, you're saying more than one camera, but how does that work in actuality?
Yeah, so, everybody's live streaming right now, right? Mm-hmm. You see a lot of people live streaming on their phones, but we've got a full-on mobile studio. So what that is there's multiple cameras. So you have three cameras. Typically, if you'd see, like, let's say it was Oprah Winfrey or the news, when you watch Fox News or MSNBC or whatever, and you've got either an interview or a panel, you're seeing these cameras switch. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we have, is we have a product that is focused on either on-stage events, multi-camera on-stage events, all the way down to an interview-style piece of content where we are live editing the material. We can live broadcast it, we can live stream it, but we can also do a live-to-tape where we're live editing the content. So that's what I mean by multi-camera. It's a multi-camera.
So you're switching product. You're switching between cameras remotely.
Exactly.
As you're doing that.
We've got some really cool, they're called pan tilt zoom cameras. They're the hottest piece of technology out of China. That's where all cameras come from, basically. Yeah. But they're the hottest piece of technology that allow you to do this multi-camera streaming or live recording.
Gotcha. And so what was your first customer when you started, having these studio space and kind of getting more of this equipment? What was kind of your first customer going down that path?
We kind of have a wide variety of clients, but, we work with some enterprise, with an enterprise level company, but we also work with the small mom and pops. But so we have a couple clients that really steer that studio space. We do some cosmetic instructional videos for a company based in Australia, Jurlique Cosmetics. So this is an amazing company, just absolutely phenomenal product. And I got really lucky because the national trainer for the estheticians is here in Cincinnati. So we really kind of connected. And so we produce instructional videos in our studio. So that, that nice. If I would say that that's a motivator for us to continue the investment into the space, in addition to the editorial style work that we do for ComSpark, which is a major technology publication.
So, and with those product demos, because or product training videos, I guess there are. So are those going out on their website then, or are they distributing those to their, like their salespeople, I guess?
Those are internal. Okay. So they're internal to train the estheticians how to perform the facial. So it's kind of funny, Sam, you know, like I'm picking up on terms that I never thought I'd heard.
Yeah. Not having a background in makeup.
Massaging the décolleté and, you know. I've learned a lot about cold stone massages and everything like that. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But as soon as we just launched this studio this year, you know, we've been in a couple smaller spaces over the past couple of years, but we just, you know, went all in on this larger space. And immediately, as soon as we opened the door, we had shoots to monetize the space immediately. So it's kind of cool.
And that's right in Reading, Ohio.
Reading. It's 1,000 square foot sound treated streaming studio. So it's a black box studio.
Yeah. And I was there just this week. And I mean, it's very much like a black box studio theater, like you'd go see a play in almost
exactly.
is what it reminded me of.
Exactly. Sure. Cool.
So what are some key trends you think that are working really well for your customers around, you know, this multi-channel video marketing?
Well, and that's maybe perhaps some of your listeners may not know exactly what that is. And so multi-channel marketing is when you take a piece of content or your advertisement and you distribute that content among many channels. So that could be on radio, in print, on your website, and social media. You know, our product is more of a multi-channel approach with video content. So that could be on, you know, we take that same piece of content and we format it accordingly to each platform. So whether that's Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn is on fire right now, and that could be for broadcast. We have a client, Garage Kings, and the content that we produce for them can be used anywhere. So when we get out and shoot the material, we prepare the content so that it can be easily distributed across multiple channels. So hopefully for your listeners, that helps better understand where we fit into that segment.
Gotcha. And I think what's really innovative too about when you're looking at multi-channel marketing and kind of repurposing content, right? Because you can, you know, from one single video you make, you could make all kinds of teaser videos, promo videos, full length, short length. You could take just the audio of a video, turn it into a podcast. Do you find a lot of clients wanting to do that? And
well, we live in a time that should be part of the package. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no, you know, the old school approach is no longer relevant. So you have to, in order for us to provide that value, it's already included, you know? So when we onboard a new client, that approach is already the expected level. So, you know, in terms of our delivery, typically the client will receive many, many assets so that they can easily distribute that stuff. And that includes stills, you know, so even when we're out shooting, we can produce the stills from the shoot. So I think Garage Kings has been a great example of that offering because we're so versatile in our offering.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a lot of people even, you know, take a podcast or a video and create infographics from it, right? Because you've got these people saying, look, here's the top 5 things you should do for landscaping. Right. I don't know. Take it, turn it into an infographic, right? It's all, the information's already there.
Yeah.
You know, and as we said, you have a big focus or at least a lot of your marketing, you talk about the live video and that being a game changer, a new opportunity for a lot of clients.
I'm going to say, Sam, that it's still an evolving space. You know, that doesn't make up the majority of our work, you know, even though, you know, we promote it heavily. It's just an evolving space. I think people in the marketing world and in the marketplace in general they're evolving into it. Yep. It's been kind of the shiny object per se for several years, but it's becoming more and more important And in fact, we've seen an opportunity to create what I call these brand experiences, where we're using the multi-camera and the live streaming to create a unique experience, even if it's an internal broadcast, you know, where we're showing something that would otherwise, to the lay person, be impossible to do. We're able to create this unique video experience for our clients. So it's kind of a fun space to explore in. And you don't have all the answers there yet. You know, so it's a very difficult thing because you have to educate people on what it is. You know, like to tell people I can produce literally a TV show on social media, it shocks people often. So
yeah. Well, and you think about it though, I imagine that, you know, if you add up the channels, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, certainly if you were able to restream this video content to other platforms, you add those up together, they have a lot more exposure than maybe your typical, you know, just a local TV channel might, that would have a normal, people would expect a TV show to be on, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can restream to all of them at once, you know, it can be pretty powerful.
Yeah, we did the coolest project probably to date, and we've been invited to come back, and we did a live celebrity chef cook-off at Our Daily Bread downtown, Soup Kitchen downtown. And there was a whole big audience down at Rheingeist having beers and having fun. And we broadcast the celebrity chef cook-off to the big audience that wouldn't otherwise fit into that kitchen to see all the action. So we had four cameras on that shoot, one camera on the food, one camera on the chefs, a camera on the panel. And I had a wireless camera operator following Bob Herzog around while he emceed the whole thing.
Bob's
great. It's just so wacky to think about what we pulled off, but pretty cool. So I love exploring that space, but 90% of our business is more corporate related content, interviews, videos for a website and social media.
I'm curious, though, with that, you know, when you talk about that live experience with Our Daily Bread there, you know, what about that do you think, you know, made it better to have it live as opposed to if it had been recorded? I mean, what was really gained? What was kind of gained there, the additional?
Well, the experience is that the other people are part of the action, you know, that they couldn't all fit into that location.
Sure.
And so they were able to have a larger audience captivated in real time than they would having it recorded. So it was just creating the experience, the feeling of knowing that these people are down the street, and then Bob could turn to the camera and say, "Hey, folks, thanks for watching the show. I'm going to catch you down there in just a few minutes," and then everybody show up. I mean, how cool is that?
Very cool.
And to see, you know, live reaction, you can't, that most of that stuff would be cut on the editing block.
Yeah.
You know, like, so if something happens live, it's normally spontaneous and it normally makes it that much more entertaining to watch, you know, especially in that format. Now, we did another project with Agar and Barking Squirrel Media. And they're great strategic partners of ours in the same industry. But, you know, like I said, we're kind of strategic partners. And we did a campaign for UC. So UC, we had a panel discussion, a half circle panel, and we were live streaming that. Now, the live feed wasn't going out to the public. It was going to the executives at UC Health. So they were down the hall. And we had this elaborate multi-camera switching on a whole panel. I mean, the technology is so wild. I can pre-program the shot. So as soon as the other person starts talking, I hit a button and it zooms in on Mary Beth. And Mary Beth is giving a heartfelt testimony about the amount of service or the quality of care that she received at UC. I mean, this stuff was absolutely phenomenal. The image was beautiful. But the executives down the hall were... their jaws were open because they were getting live testimony in what looked to appear to be a Hollywood television show from their client. So just amazing. That is what I would call a brand experience, because you walk out of that event feeling like you experienced something special or you got feedback in real time. So I'm into the new year. I'm focusing more on what those brand experiences are.
Yeah. Well, and that's key, I think. And when you kind of started doing some of those live brand experiences, I know you've had a number of, you know, like you said, it's an emerging technology. It's an emerging space. So, you know, there's some challenges there in terms of like internet connectivity and bandwidth and stuff that you've had to battle. I guess, yeah. What have you kind of learned, you know, what works from a sort of, you know, what you can pull off standpoint, or how do you solve that?
That UC job came down to seconds. There was firewall issue. I couldn't connect to the internet. Mm-hmm. We tried to hardwire the feed over to a television. The cables weren't working. I mean, it was just crazy. I kept my composure. Even the guys putting the show on said, "Hey, Les, you did a great job." Mm-hmm. You know, because they knew I was faced with some adversity.
Yeah.
And it was either pass or fail. So it literally came down to me calling Verizon to activate a new modem to work, because they had some, that it's a medical thing. So the firewalls and stuff like it just wouldn't allow all the systems to communicate, because it's locked down like Fort Knox, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it literally came down to seconds. I saved the feed with seconds. So yeah, there's many scenarios it's a lot of planning up front. You know, if we're going to do something out of studio, I have to do all that pre-planning, the site evaluation, test the internet and all that jazz. So, you know, that's one advantage that happened in the studio. You have more control over the environment.
Well, and that's an advantage if you're going and doing a recorded segment.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have electricity and all the equipment that you brought works, you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, it definitely is much more complex to try to pull off something really live.
Right.
Just because of that.
Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow, so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
I'm curious, too, though, you talked about switching cameras. You know, I always watch like on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he has those on YouTube as well, those mm-hmm. videos, mm-hmm. you know, and as they talk, they switch between mm-hmm. speaker. Is that automatic, or you think is someone switching that?
It can. There is an auto switch. There's also switches that have a foot control.
Oh, okay.
So he can be hitting the foot pedal under the table. And, you know, I use some advanced stuff from Data Video, mm-hmm. but there is a Roland switch that was made for musicians that allows a two camera switch, and you got a foot pedal, A, B.
So maybe Joe Rogan's hitting the pedal every time.
I don't know, but there is some voice activated stuff on other switchers, things that there could be an auto device there or something.
Gotcha. You mentioned Data Video, and I think something that's very cool that, you know, you pulled off as sort of a exposure strategy for your company and services is you're buying this equipment that, again, is pretty bleeding edge for some of this stuff in terms of
cutting edge,
you know, live video stuff. So you reached out to those manufacturers and you said, "Hey, I'm using your stuff and I want to talk about it."
Yeah.
And so you've gotten a number of.
Well, the kind of funny thing is when I started this pitch on live streaming in 2017, I caught the eye of at the time, a guy that worked at Roland. And, you know, and so I got their attention and they wrote me up and put me on their website, and, you know, great product use case. And I got the exposure. I got some of the, you know, recognition as someone in the industry that knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I connected with Rob and he's now the business development manager at Data Video. And so we've had, you know, been in contact and a relationship ever since the Roland thing, and Rob transitioned to Data Video. And so we've been in touch. And when I saw all the technology that Data Video offers, like these people like invented Dolby Surround in the 80s, like they don't mess around. When I saw all the levels of technology that they provide, I was drawn in by that because I'm just a geek at heart, you know? And so anything video, live production, small scale, large scale, I mean, all the way to a full-on broadcast van. Like, you can get the whole show put into a van, and you can do, like, you can drive around. And, you know,
I'm looking forward to the day when you have a mobile van.
Well, they're global. They're global. It's a global company. They're based in Taiwan, and I've got the attention of Taiwan. I'm friends with the global marketing director. So they appreciate my adventurous outlook on how to use data video technology and multi-streaming, multi-camera streaming technology and the way that we're putting it into the marketplace. Because they are very, you know, most of their business is more traditional, like houses of worship, casinos, you know, big things that need the cameras permanently mounted. And I'm using it in a different way to get out and do these creative shoots. So there is a mutual beneficial relationship there because I'm putting the product into high use.
Yeah. Well, I think there's probably a lot of...
And I'm getting new cameras. I'm getting new cameras for data video.
Yeah, so, and I think...
Pay attention for open box video, and there's another little device that will help you in right here during this podcast that Data Video is rolling out, which is a capture card.
Okay.
So you can use any DSLR, any camera, and use it as a device on your laptop. So you go right to Facebook.
Oh, okay.
So cool little device. So they're going to disrupt the market with this USB capture device or Thunderbolt capture device.
Cool. So are there any applications, you know, these various live recording technologies, like things you want to do with them you haven't yet, like some concept for a type of media or spot or recording you want to do that you haven't tried yet or been able to yet?
Well, I think for me, the smart thing to do is continue to pursue what we're already good at, which is, you know, this multi-camera interview where, you have a thought leader you want to interview. So I want to kind of stay grounded in that space, but I love these quote-unquote experiences that I'm talking about, and that's where you can totally get rid of any of the limitations and try to create, you know, something that's unique and that's not been done before. I mean, who's heard of a live celebrity chef cook-off on Facebook and say, yes, we can do that? You know, there's not, I remember entering the meeting, they said, we have this vision, and we need this, and we want this, and they were shocked when I said, yes. You know, like the ability to say yes is powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody has an idea and they don't think it's possible and you can say yes and then stand behind it and actually do it, that's a pretty fun feeling.
Yeah, very cool. So your background originally is not in video. You didn't come up through art school training in that. So what did you do, or I guess, how did you overcome that challenge to learn all that stuff quickly to get to where you're at now where you can produce things?
Well, I had a couple folks in, well, first of all, I had a friend of mine I've known since basically grade school. He's in LA and he's a film producer. He's now more heavily into content development and management, but he was kind of coaching me from LA. So every time I put out a horrible video, he was, you know, sending me messages saying, no, don't do that. What are you doing? You got to fix the audio. You got to fix the color. Just yesterday, he's like, hey, man, that video has way too much magenta in it from that light. You know what I mean? So he still participates in my success, and I'm grateful for that, John Chia, if you're watching or have watched. So that's one area. And then the other space is, you know, just being self-taught and motivating myself, you know, to get through all those challenging elements, you know, to learn Adobe from scratch with no formal, I mean, to just jump in and start. I mean, it's a pretty daunting task. But I think that's what makes us so unique, is that we weren't influenced by the industry. We weren't influenced by this is how it's supposed to be done less.
Yeah, the old way of doing things.
Yeah, I took more of an entrepreneurial path than, hey, this is the cookie cutter approach to this industry. This is the, you know, and some of that is a blessing and some of that is a curse because, you know, there's a lot of things in this business that I didn't anticipate, which the biggest issue that faces video creators today is the fact that anyone with a cell phone thinks that they can make a video. You know, so it's a wide, all the way up to Hollywood production. You know, there's nothing, there's any level in between a cell phone and a $20,000 shoot. There's no common ground anywhere. You know, so that poses a challenge from a business side, is growing the business that way.
Well, I think also, you know, when you're, it's sort of like with this podcast, I mean, this, I think you'll be episode 26, right? And, you know, when I started out, it's like, oh, just buy this, buy that. And of course, because you don't necessarily know what you're buying, then you end up having to rebuy and upgrade very quickly, right? And then, you know, you have thousands of dollars of stuff laying around that you don't even use anymore.
Oh, my gosh. I could tell you a story, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, of course, you can resell a lot of that. But, you know, it takes a while to get kind of the right gear in place, right? So if we look at, let's talk about... sort of paid video promotion a little bit, meaning on the social media channels. You know, if you look at the recorded videos you've done, obviously everybody knows you can boost videos on Facebook. Maybe they know that. What's sort of some of the return that your clients have seen in that area if they hire you to, like, say, produce a couple spots and then you're going to boost and promote them on Facebook? I mean, what does that typically cost for, you know, how many views do they get? What does that look like in terms of...
Well, there's no two clients that are the same, and the style and the content that we produce is also not the same. Mm-hmm. So each case is treated differently, and each client is going to have different indicators of success. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, more of our B2B customers, it's more about brand awareness, and it's more about the long-term, you know, value of the piece versus the short term, you know, so that, you know, like I said, it's a case by case basis. You know, most of the B2C clients that we work with, that's more of that would categorize more of as an impulse buy. You know, we can create an ad that's more specific to an impulse buy, you know, so I look at it like that, like, hey, what can this video do for you in the short term? What is it going to do for you in the long term? What is the long term? You know, what are you going to receive out of this overall? You know, and most of our business clients, it's more of a conversion tool that sits on their website to help convert, or a blog or a post that they, you know, promote to their ideal client. And then it educates their client and then converts that web visitor into a customer. So we often look at most of the video in that way, is that it's not an immediate... It's not going to change the path of your business tomorrow, but it's going to have an evergreen or a long impact for your clients to help educate your ideal customers.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's kind of a brand exposure and nurturing type angle. And then there's also the sort of immediate call to, you know, call to action, call now, buy this, get this coupon.
It's just, you know, we're using the creative piece to capture the attention and capture leads. You know, we can use that in a way that's unique on Facebook, you know, where we create a visual piece that just gets the interest in the newsfeed. And so there's that element. And then, you know, LinkedIn is blazing hot right now. Mm-hmm. It is on fire. If you see it, follow any of the social media marketing blogs or whatever. And for me, you know, I would probably say that I've been sharing our work on LinkedIn for the past 14 months. Just a little, you know, I'll upload a video, one of our client videos or whatever on LinkedIn. And I kind of attribute that to how we're getting attention, or we're getting recognized as video creators, is because that professional, you know, I'm B2B, so that professional audience is seeing us on LinkedIn. So, you know, it really depends on the client. You know, we start with the strategy and approach that, you know, what is the content? How are we producing it? We just now, I believe it's publicized already, but we did work for the Geiler Company, which is a local HVAC company. And they've been around since 135 years, and they're fourth generation. What a cool story.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the sales and marketing manager comes to me with a unique challenge. And the challenge is he wants a 2-minute video that talks about their history, their training, and their relationship with their customers. So that's an immense challenge, right?
You get like 30 seconds for each of those, right?
Yeah, but it's hard to glue all those pieces together. But we, you know, in that particular client, we really excelled in meeting their expectations in terms of staying on schedule, getting the vision and the product that they wanted. And now that product is on their website. And then we deliver, just like I said earlier in the podcast, that we delivered additional sizzle reels so that their marketing team can use that to grab attention online. There's not necessarily a message with those sizzle reels, but we maximize the material to create a visual piece of art or piece of video that can help attract some leads. So those are some of the things that you can do, kind of just boost your attention, get some and grab some info.
Gotcha. The other thing I've noticed you doing on Facebook, which is similar to, you know, there's all these sort of big internet celebrities, like guys like Gary Vaynerchuk and stuff, that they've gone out and I guess basically decided to record their life, you know, so everywhere they go,
have D-Rock. A video guy with them. He's got D-Rock. And so when I hired Chris, I said, hey man, you can be my D-Rock. And I never really, got to that. It looks like he might be watching.
Yeah.
But I never got, you know, to that phase.
But I think you have, and I've seen a lot of your videos on Facebook where, you know, you record yourself at the dog park, you record yourself, you know, having lunch at some Cincinnati spot. So you do kind of, you definitely are tied to your brand. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you personally are out there on your social channel, mm-hmm. creating videos to promote your brand of just your everyday life, you know, mm-hmm. that people watch mm-hmm. and they think, and of course they start thinking, well, maybe I could do this for my business. Maybe I could, you know.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do on your own that doesn't require, you know, the budget and dealing with a video company. There's lots of, like, I'm live streaming right now on my mobile device on Facebook. Like, it's probably going to be not the fanciest video, mm-hmm. and the audio is probably not going to be all that great, but it's just another piece of content out there that someone may or may not watch that could, you know, tell them more about my business, just like we're kind of doing this podcast. But you can do video like that, and it's perfectly normal for even brands and companies to have imperfect, you know, raw video. Look at the guy, T-Mobile, he would do this ridiculous live stream from his house where he would like cook in his kitchen with a big pink T-Mobile apron on. As the CEO, I can't remember his name, but I would chuckle seeing his broadcast because the big brand was doing this hokey pokey video. But what it does is it created the relationship between T-Mobile, the CEO of T-Mobile, and all of their followers. Yeah. You know, it was like a personal thing that created that one-on-one touch, that relationship with their customers. And so I thought, you know, and that can be applied to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to share the raw moments, you know, the parts of your business that makes it awesome. Even if you're like the biggest dork on earth, share your Excel spreadsheet on how you save someone like, you know, 10 hours because you just shaved off the last column. Like, go ahead and share it. And tell people what makes you so awesome. Don't be afraid to share the raw, the off moments, you know, because it does, you know, help people relate to what you do.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because there's businesses out there that have, like, everybody knows who the founders are and the leaders are, right? And these leaders we revere, you know, that, you know, and, you know, Elon and Steve Jobs and all these guys, right? And then there's all these businesses that I have no idea who the CEO is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, like, because they've never put themselves in a public facing anywhere. And you look at that T-Mobile thing and it's like, well, people, you know, saw his house, saw how he lived, whatever. And obviously it was kind of staged, I'm sure. Yep. But
now, you know, I was editing video on Facebook before people thought it was acceptable to release video on Facebook. And this was like 2016. This was recent, you know, before the brands really got a hold of it. This was just 3 and 4 years ago. Well, I'm going to keep this guy nameless, but I busted into his office and I said, I was just excited. I didn't come there to pitch anything. I was just excited to share the news. Like, hey, I found this great tactic to shoot content and use Facebook to talk to your people. And it's having a crazy, ridiculous impact. He turned to me and he said, Les, I will never do this. I will never. Number one, he shut me up because he thought I was in a sales pitch, but I was just excited to share. He misunderstood the approach. Now, this is a nonprofit. I was friends with the founder for years before I even met this guy, you know. And so, but the funny and ironic thing is today, there isn't a single week that doesn't go by that he grabs his phone and talks to the followers. And so it's an amazing transition from just 3 or 4 years ago saying, I will never do this, to they can't get enough of it because they saw the value in sharing what they do, how they do, and the passion behind it in those raw, unscripted, awesome moments.
And for those most successful videos, that in terms of views or exposure, I mean, how many views do you think your clients have been getting from those on Facebook, say, like, you know, are we talking tens of thousands,
well,
hundreds of thousands?
See,
thousands?
I got away from focusing on one specific platform because that's like the kiss of death. Because, you know, like I said, that multi-channel, I'm drilling this multi-channel approach because the space is no longer measured specifically in the views, you know, it's the impact and who you're reaching versus, hey, how far did it go? You know, so I don't measure the success by views anymore. I measure the success by the cash register or the leads coming in or the real-time feedback that the client receives. So I don't necessarily focus on that, but there has been videos that we've sent out that have reached 70,000 people in one day. Mm-hmm. And where, you know, someone's, you know, restaurant and business has received thousands of dollars worth of income. Mm-hmm. And so those are great successful moments, but those are very hard to reproduce. So I lower the expectation down and I provide more value through what we're delivering. And then when we have a big success, like a video reached, you know, took off, then those are just the fun moments. Because I've already met the expectation before the launch.
Sure. Well, and it is true, certainly, that, you know, like, I have a friend that puts videos on Facebook, and it'll say that he's getting hundreds and hundreds of views, but it's because somebody's watching it for 2 seconds or 1 second, right? Mm-hmm. When you really drill into it, it's a much smaller number of people that watch it all the way through, obviously, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so just, you know, focusing on raw total views does not necessarily mean anything.
Yeah, now one tip I have for your listeners, if you're venturing in and you're publishing videos on multiple platforms and you're uploading content on YouTube and Vimeo and LinkedIn and Facebook, they compete with each other right now. Mm-hmm. So do not share YouTube on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Do not share YouTube on Facebook. If you're Nicki Minaj, go ahead and share whatever you want, wherever you can. You're a viral hit anyways, right? But if you're on our level, upload each video to each platform because each platform
natively,
because they treat video differently.
Yeah.
And so your SEO, your search engine optimization power players are Vimeo and YouTube and embedding. So if you're putting it on your website, you know, YouTube is this place for that. You may have 5 million subscribers on YouTube. You know, obviously you're going to put your videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But LinkedIn specifically, go ahead and upload your content there. There's a max of 10 minutes on LinkedIn for uploads. Mm. And they just rolled out LinkedIn Live. So you were on my More with Less show, and I'm trying to get that thing going. But upload to each platform. And I'm excited. LinkedIn is still sending me support tickets to try and get me up and running. But hopefully you'll be seeing me live on LinkedIn.
And that's definitely one of those cutting edge things. Like, you know, they've not figured that all out yet on their side.
Yeah. It's beta.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think? I also think it's interesting with all these different channels that, you know, because like you said, they're all competing with each other for the most users and exposure and growth and new users per month and all this sort of stuff. And obviously, because that's where they get their value from. Like I was reading, you know, WhatsApp when it was bought, messaging app, WhatsApp, you know, it was bought for $6 billion.
Ridiculous.
Because they had 1 million new members per day joining, right?
It's crazy.
So their revenue was anywhere to justify that. But everybody just thought, wow, 1 million per day? You know,
that's crazy.
And you look at, you know, I've been hearing a lot about and you know, one of the newest platforms that's just exploding out there is TikTok, mm-hmm. right? Which, you know, is owned by this Chinese company, which makes it a little different than some of the sort of American tech companies over here. But I mean, it's just having absolute explosive growth. And of course, it has a little bit more like a target, you know, high school and millennials younger and stuff audience, are on there. You know, do you think do brands need to be everywhere like that? You know, is it worthwhile for all businesses to be everywhere?
Well, I'm not on Snapchat and I don't do TikTok. I should, but I don't. Maybe I will. You know, my current audience is, you know, on LinkedIn and Facebook. So I don't necessarily need right now this TikTok exposure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good for a younger audience, but my client is not young. Mm-hmm. You know, they're middle age and older. They're executives, they're marketing buyers, they're advertising buyers, you know, they're founders and CEOs. They're not 13-year-old kids. Mm-hmm.
But your customers, clients might be. Like, you've worked with Morgan's Canoe, so they might, perhaps they could go on there or something, you know.
Yeah, potentially, but that's something that they're going to do on their own mm-hmm. without my help. You know, mm-hmm. that's more the raw cell phone video stuff. Now, we can produce the heavier branded style content for that, but that's, you know, again, client specific.
Yeah, because you can upload like recorded videos to that as well.
People people are doing some wicked cool edits on their videos.
Yeah. So when you're working with these customers, what are sort of some of your core values that are important to your business?
Honesty. You know, being upfront and realistic about the expectations, you know, and getting that out in the open right away, you know. I always share what the process is. You know, I think that that's really important, you know, just the transparency from start to finish. Well, here's the product. Here's our approach. Here's our method. Here's how we're going to shoot it. Here's the content, you know, like being just completely wide open and transparent is really important for us. You know, that has a couple benefits because obviously we want to stay on budget, you know, mm-hmm. and so being clear and concise and honest with the client about what the process is really core to us. And then a portion of our time is, you know, we typically try to give back in some capacity. So if I have typically a couple passion projects a year where I'm taping someone, give them the added exposure. And so, you know, for me, that's part of our value as a mm-hmm. company that, hey, a portion of our time is to be given back to a cause, a person, an entity that we have some mutual respect for. And it could be a faith-based group, it could be a for-profit, you know, it could be an entrepreneur just getting started, you know. And so that's important to me. It always has been, no matter what business I've been in, is just, you know, providing some source, using my tools for good, using the equipment and the purpose and, you know, everything for something of value to the community. And so those are two big things for me.
Of those sort of give back type projects, I mean, is there one recently you did that was really rewarding for you?
Well, I mean, it's pretty regular that we're doing something of value for someone. And so it's hard to pin down very specific that we're going the extra mile, you know, so it's pretty just kind of part ingrained in who we are. We've done some work for a couple of the nonprofits here locally. We've done some work for a company called Tikkun Farm. And they help rehabilitate and people that have been through trauma, and whether they're children or they're adults, they have kind of a retreat and a farm where you can get out and, you know, visit with the animals and have some time by the fire and stuff like that. So that was a couple of years ago. And then we've done work for a local nonprofit that serves the homeless and the convicted and the addicted. So they literally grab them right out of the justice center and introduce Christ into their life for the first time.
Amazing. And we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, new technologies and new stuff we wanted to get into. And I think we touched on this, you know, TV shows for the internet kind of idea. So tell me a little bit more about that. What does that look like?
Well, kind of exploring into that. That's kind of my, like, the fun part of, mm-hmm. of my business. It takes away like all the pressure of the business as a whole. And we just try to imagine, you know, like Disney has their Imagineers. I like to think of myself as an Imagineer, but with video content, you know, and what can we explore and create that creates some type of impact or visibility? So, you know, the technology that we use is literally a mobile television studio. So in no time, we can be up and running and create something that can shock the world. You know, it's something that's pretty wild. Whether that's an interview or whether it's, you know, a celebrity chef cook-off, we have an opportunity to create this epic piece of content.
Gotcha. You've lived here in Cincinnati your whole life. You went to LaSalle. You know, you're a Cincinnati boy.
Born and bred.
What do you think of running a business in Cincinnati as your home base here? What are the upsides and the downsides to it?
Okay. So it's my hometown. I love it. I love Cincinnati. There's a good vibe here in Cincinnati for the startup and the tech and the, there's lots of energy being pumped into this ecosystem here locally. And that's great. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of big business here in Cincinnati, large companies, and there's a lot of old school, old business in Cincinnati, you know? And so for me, I have always been, you know, kind of this, disruptor, you know, in this video space, in this, you know, as an entrepreneur, when I started my cleaning business, nobody ever heard of a green cleaning, carpet cleaning company in Cincinnati, you know, but now they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've always been this kind of disruptor in no matter what I'm doing. And so Cincinnati is very, conservative, you know, in their decision making. You know, I've even got a great friend, great guy. You know, he's a marketing advisor here locally. And he, you know, he always puts out a little thing that says, don't chase the shiny object. Mm-hmm. And it's so, I chuckle because I am the shiny object, you know? And so it's challenging marketplace. So if I was in LA, Seattle, New York, or Chicago, I'd probably be doing double or triple the business. Okay. Because I have to do much more educating here locally, on what it is that I'm doing. You know, that makes the market unique for what I do. So that makes it a challenge for us to promote our business. Even though if I was in LA, I'd probably have, you know, jobs ringing in every day. And so there's a big difference. Or if I was in like Menlo Park or California or, you know, Silicon Valley or wherever, I'd probably have much more opportunity than I do here in town.
Interesting. I imagine the same is probably true for any kind of technology company, really. Any kind of technology service company.
Well, production in general, you know, I mean, we've actually got jobs from LA and New York and Chicago based production companies. You know, they just, even the companies here locally, the P&Gs, the, you know, the large enterprise level companies, they're sending the work to LA.
Sure.
They're not doing the work here. You know, they're working with LA agencies. That's why I was lucky to make the connection with Jerlique's National Trainer. Otherwise, they'd be doing the work in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, L.A. is their first stop from Australia, I believe. Isn't it? Do people fly into L.A. from Australia?
Sure.
I mean, is that the first? Is that the fastest way to get to? I think so. So, you know, it would make sense to do it.
Cincinnati's very out of the way, right?
Yeah. So I kind of got lucky in that regard. But if that was the only thing, I wish there was more adventurous risk-taking in this space.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier your cleaning business, that was your very first kind of entrepreneurial endeavor. And a big focus of that was sort of the environmental benefit and the sort of green solutions. With this business, being that it's video and digital and all this, you know, have you had any opportunity or have you been able to sort of weave in that sort of green environmental aspect to what you're doing?
Well, I really don't create any waste unless you want to critique one of my earlier videos. I don't really create any waste. You know, it's kind of funny. I have the cleaning business to completely blame for where I'm at and where I'm going because, you know, 10 years ago, I started with another video producer and we were doing green tips. So I was going out and interviewing, you know, folks. And so that's kind of where the bug came in. And I was doing these green tips interviews and kind of like the More with Less show. I was doing that for the cleaning business. So I was representing Cincinnati Maintenance, getting out and selling or No, I was interviewing other people that had green initiatives. So, I mean, in that way, I could probably use the tools to help grow more green focused initiatives here locally. But, mm-hmm. you know, it may have hit a plateau. I don't know, you know, the green initiative here locally. You know, I know they want to go this 20 by 30 or something yeah. like that. You know, they got a lot of lead buildings and stuff like that. You know, who knows? Maybe I could find a little niche in, mm-hmm. In producing green style content. So who knows, Sam, maybe I'd get yeah. back to that, but maybe that's a way I could serve the sustainable audience here locally.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a value you have. It's just, like I said, I imagine it's hard to figure out how to apply it. Just with,
it's,
you know,
very hard.
Other than saving electricity or something, I suppose.
The key term, like I just had someone in my studio today, brilliant man. He's been all over the globe, entrepreneur. And it's like, he wants to start a show. And like, the thing is, I said, look, this is great. We have to monetize it. Mm-hmm. There's a cost to the studio. And there's, I said, you have no shortage of amazing content. But we just have to find the finances to be able to produce the material. You know, and so in certain cases, I'm willing to bend the rules a little bit, because if someone has really awesome content or they have the reach, obviously it's mutually beneficial for the business to grow,
yep.
you know, so in certain cases I have to make some exceptions. So.
Gotcha. So for folks out there listening and thinking that, you know, trying to decide what you can help them with, or, you know, what should they reach? What are the three big problems or three big things you can help them solve that they should reach out for?
Sure. They're suffering from not educating their customers, you know, and so they have an area where they're trying to educate what the product or service that they offer, how it values, what the value is to their customer. So that's a great reason. A client may have a thought leader that they need to capture. So someone that they want to interview, and they want to kind of capture a moment. We just did some work with Ocean Programs, and they put on their big Threshold conference this year at Crossroads Church, and their thing was, hey, we've got the keynote and we want to capture these little pieces. So if a client has someone that they need to capture, we're a great source for that. And and you know, if they have something special, a special event or something they want to promote, that's a good chance to
great.
Work together.
So what's the easiest way for people to get in touch with you?
Well, it's at Valair Studios everywhere, Sam. I'm plastered all over the internet.
And how do you spell Valair, just in case people...
V-A-L-E-R-E Studios with an S.
Yeah, so if they Google that, they'll find it on 50 different websites.
Oh, I'm above the fold, Sam. I've got the Google My Business. I've got, you know, all the different properties, and I'm Google-fied, so we're good.
Awesome. Well, Les, it's been great having you on, and it's been really cool seeing you evolve this business and kind of grow it out of creating out of whole cloth, you know, in the very beginning there, and now, you know, building your studio and deploying all this awesome technology.
Just a crazy ride, man.
Yeah.
It's a crazy ride. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.